Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 75 of the Weekly Long Box. I'm Leonard, joined by Todd. Todd, how are we doing today?
I'm doing great. You know, just a lazy weekend for me and ready to do another episode.
Yes, my weekend in the last couple days has been consumed with eBay mailing.
Yes, I'm even thinking about getting one of your auctions.
Well, again, you would mention, and actually, I saved this one for the air because as I looked through everything, that's one of the few things that I actually put up for auction.
Okay.
Then I'm like, boy, I hope nobody bids on this one because I might keep that one for myself.
Really?
Yeah.
Keep it for yourself.
No, get out of town.
Keep it for yourself.
I have a couple issues of the mid-200s Amazing Spider-Man that I'm keeping for myself.
Mm-hmm. Hey, if you want to keep it, I just want to read it. That's all it really comes down to.
I think I just want to read it, too. But yeah, so that takes up a lot. You'd be surprised on how many comics you can cram into a $6 priority envelope.
Are you using a stick to bash them in?
No, I kind of use a piece of cardboard as a wedge.
Ah, wedging instead of stuffing. I got you.
Yes. So I'm glad you had a nice lazy weekend. My life has just been consumed with this and will be at least for the next 2 weeks as I'm trying to get all these books out of the house as a favor to a good friend of mine. But soon they will all be gone.
And that'll be great because then you'll have, what, next to no comics left in your house?
No comics on the top floor of the house. All my stuff is in the basement.
And how many floors are there at your Carson Mansion? I forget. I've only seen the East Wing when I was over for WrestleMania.
Well, that's the section that we let you in, so I've said too much.
Okay. I don't want to know too much. There's secrets and panels and sliding doors.
Right. I'm shrouded in mystery and secrecy.
You are.
Yeah. So we actually have some comic book stuff to talk about. You know, some of the news from this past week. We're going to talk a little bit about movie stuff, only because there was a couple interesting things that have come up that do tie directly into the comics themselves and how they affect Todd's favorite aspect of comic book collecting, and that's the speculation aspect of them.
That's what I'm here for, 90% speculation talk.
You know, we have talk of the Boston Comic Con from last weekend. We have the talk of the Comic Con this weekend. Controversy in the Eisners. Were certain creators blacklisted? Ooh.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yes. Free comics available digitally, of course. We have what we read from last week. And I'll say this. As busy as I've been over the last 7 days, I made it a point to make sure I read your Doctor Who Prisoners of Time number 4 this week.
I know. I figured that would have been right out of the gate. You wouldn't have been out of the shop yet. You would have been paying with one hand and reading with the other.
That book's like the Band-Aid or a trip to the dentist. Let's just get it over with.
Wow. Oh, that was a pipe bomb right there.
I kid because I love the what do they call them? Whoers? Is that what a Doctor Who fan is called? A whoer?
I've heard. Yeah, a whoer. Yeah. I've heard them called Whovians.
A Whovian.
A Whovian. Not a whoer.
All right. No. And we have what we're looking forward to this week. And I think we probably share the same book that we're looking forward to this week.
Maybe.
And it might play into some news that we'll kind of get into at the end of the show because we're not that sort of show. Tons of sketches and our favorite supporting character from comics. And this one saw a lot of newer folks pop up, a lot of, you know, characters that have been created in the last couple years, some old standby, some interesting choices, but I think one definite runaway winner with this.
I think so, too.
Yes, indeed. So let's dive right into the news. You know, we had mentioned as we attempt to do as we are in the midst of con season, which not unlike the summer movie season begins in May. Actually, if you're living in England, the summer movie season has already begun. But we try to let you know when the big conventions, you know, when I say big conventions, conventions, no matter the size, are always a good time to go to. Boston Comic Con was slated to happen this past week, and, you know, we had talked on the show last week as things had not escalated in that area as they did the next few days afterwards. So the convention ended up being canceled. However, there was a comic shop in the area. I think the name of the shop is Kamikaze.
Okay.
I'll give them a plug here on the show for anyone listening. I know some of our listeners ended up going there. A lot of the creators were already in town or en route before the decision was made to cancel the show. So they all ended up just at this show, at this comic shop, ended up being a free Comic-Con. Anyone that came by, you know, got to meet all these creators, get these sketches. And, you know, they made the best of a really, really bad situation. And, you know, hopefully none of our listeners or families or friends or et cetera were affected by anything that was going on in the Boston area this past week.
Yeah, I have to tip my hat. That was like a cool thing, you know, like come on down and, yeah, and free. And I think it was like any vendors who wanted to show up or whatever. I mean, it's just, you know, there was, like you said, a rough time. And it was nice to see, like, even though that little part of a community, the comic community, just like pulled, you know, a show together real quick. And I just think that's awesome.
Yep, I agree. Definitely. One of the other things we had mentioned, we talked about last week as well, that we have to get some more information on. And that is a controversy with the Eisner voting. One of the folks that vote on the Eisners very publicly had stated, when all the Before Watchmen stuff was happening, that any creator that was involved with Before Watchmen, he was effectively blacklisting.
Oh, no.
Right, saying that he was not going to vote for them in the Eisner. Now, a couple of them did show up in the Eisner judging, but I guess this one person, of course, said this very publicly, and it caused some of the folks, your Darwin Cooks, Brian Azzarello's, who worked on Before Watchmen, to come out and, you know, point the fingers and bring this up. And other judges have come out and said, no, 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 this person was just kind of like spouting off a little bit, you know. But what it comes down to is Todd yourself said the Eisners are a little too hoity-toity for you.
Yes, they are. I think I really do. I think that they look down on superhero comics and like mainstream comics. I mean, they put them in there, and they are. I totally agree with, like, you know, some of their choices, the best of the best. But some of the stuff that they choose, like, I've never heard of. And I think, like, in the past, they've used, like, you know, like, oh, best ongoing comic by a small company. And, like, they would get two issues out a year. Mm-hmm. And it was just, I was like, I really think you're stretching with some of this stuff.
Well, I think a lot of it is, you know, the voters obviously are chosen from a specific pool, and they have a specific type of comic that they like. And it makes me feel good when stuff that I read makes it on the list, as we talked last week, your Daredevils, your Hawkeyes, stuff like that. That makes me very happy. But for there to be, you know, speculation of people being blacklisted and all this or other sort of nonsense, it's just what it is. You know, the Eisner, I guess, means something. To the creators, but does it really mean anything to the general buying public if it says on the cover of your book, Eisner Award winning or Eisner nominated? You know, the jury's still out. You know, do you see these books that have won the Eisners, like, start doing Batman or Justice League numbers?
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
No, I guess it's prestigious, as a bargaining chip to the publishers to... You know, so they can say, hey, we have an Eisner Award winner working on such and such a book.
I forget what award it was, but it was when Sandman, Neil Gaiman won an award for Sandman. Mm-hmm. It was one of my favorite quotes for about all this. He won it. I'm trying to remember what issue he won it for. I'll look it up in a little bit. But it was like, you know, he won this award and a comic book had never won the award.
Oh, it was like a fantasy award.
Right. Yes. And then he, like, the next year they completely changed the rules. So comics, you know, a comic story couldn't win. And Neil Gaiman said, he goes, like, you know, doing that, what you did, is like closing the door of the barn after the horses got out and won the Kentucky Derby. It's just not very fair. And I was like, I totally agree. And that's the way I kind of think of things, is that it's looked down upon, you know, in certain aspects.
Yeah, it was the Midsummer's Night Dream issue of Sandman, and it's the World Fantasy Award, and exactly what you said there. That's quite the memory you got on you.
I'm sorry I didn't have it all, but I think that was pretty good.
Yeah, they claim that it says the widely circulated story that the rules were subsequently changed to prevent another comic book from winning were not entirely true. The World Fantasy Award website states comics are eligible in the special award professional category. We never made a change in the rules. Neil Gaiman, however, won under short fiction and not special professional.
So you can never win for short fiction again, is what they're saying. Okay. Right. However you want to spin it, I guess.
Right. So yeah, that's very interesting. So this leads me to a discussion that I've wanted to have, and we promised to have when this all began. I think before Watchmen is done.
It's actually funny. The Comedian comes out later today, which is the last issue of the Before Watchmen series. Like, they'll all be done now.
So, you were reading Comedian. Is it too soon to tell? Is this the last book that holds the whole thing together? Like, what were your thoughts on the whole thing? Was it worth it, do you think, financially, creatively, whatever, to DC to publish this story?
Money-wise, yes. They were smart to publicize it because, you know, it did very well. Now, reading it, once again, different stories or different books have different grades for me. I really liked one of the weird things was the two-issue Moloch series by Azriello and I'm trying to think of Rizzo, I think, drew it. That was amazing. And then, like, you know, but I look at the Silk Spectre, and I thought it looked beautiful. I thought Amanda Conner did some wonderful things with the art and stuff like that, but the story drugged to me. Now, it did do a lot of things. Like, you could see where it intertwined with Watchmen, the regular book, and I thought that was cool, but the story kind of lost me. I'm trying to think of what some of the other ones were. The best one was The Minutemen by Darwin Cook. That was pretty much interesting, and it's an interesting take on the whole story of the Minutemen, and they go into some side stuff like who was the one character he had the noose around his neck, Hooded Justice. There's some interesting things on, like, maybe the murder and disappearance of Hooded Justice because he disappeared back in the day, and they go down that route. And I was like, this is great. Interesting new stuff that we learn, and it doesn't affect the Watchmen book as itself. But in the end, I enjoyed most of them, and I only thought like a couple weren't that great. But none of them I was like, this is the most horrible thing I've ever read.
Right, and that's the whole thing. It's obviously where you fall in that category is depending on what side of the Alan Moore versus DC sort of thing. I'm all for these creators, many of whom I am a fan of their work. Got a paycheck out of this. Say what you will about it. It's a property that's owned by DC. They've tried to work with Alan Moore, sure. It's been difficult on both sides. Neither party has kind of played nice throughout the many, many years. I've mentioned it before on the show. One of my favorites was I'll never forget, it was an issue of Wizard or Toy Fair, one of those publications where they showed, at the time, DC direct action figures for the Watchmen. And the way that those figures would always come out is you would see them, and then they wouldn't be out for like a year or whatever. And they were supposed to be out for the 15th anniversary of Watchmen. And whatever ended up happening is they were advance solicited to come out a little bit afterwards. And then all of a sudden, Alan Moore is like, "No, I don't feel the 17th year anniversary is special enough. I'm not giving you permission to do these."
Yeah, I do remember that, and I remember Dave Gibbons saying he really wanted them. Now, I'm not saying that he, you know, for the money or whatever, he thought it was really cool just to have them. Mm-hmm. But he was like, I think I do remember him like Alan, come on, like, this would be kind of cool. And he was like, yeah, nah. But I do remember them putting out the limited edition books. Like, that was part of a big thing. And I think they did put the slip case out, and there was like a special one with a Dave Gibbons sketch, if I'm correct.
Right.
But, you know, those came out, but they have the rights, then they don't have, you know, definitely have to ask for permission to put out new versions of Watchmen, the book. So they, boom, there you go.
Right. So for me, I did try a bunch of the early ones when they had first come out. As you'd mentioned, the Silk Spectre one, which was very nice looking. Comedian, Ozymandias.
That was the other good one. I'm sorry. Ozymandias with Jay Lee's art was beautiful. And I'm looking forward to seeing him on. He's doing Superman Batman, I believe.
Yep.
So that should look really good.
So the only one that ended up really holding my attention and, you know, that I stuck with throughout the entirety of it was the Minutemen one. I just love Darwin Cook's art. It's so beautiful. And the story that he told was very simple. What I read of the other ones felt like it relied too much on, you know, it felt like it used the original Watchmen story as a crutch as opposed to enhancing the story, if that makes any sense.
Fair enough. I could see what you're saying, and I could see how Minutemen basically was its own thing, because they definitely, you know, they used so little Minutemen other than like the comedian Silk Spectre storyline. But that, right. But this was like a brand new, fresh mystery.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
So all in all, I think financially, you know, I'm sure DC was happy with the numbers, and these are going to be things that are just going to be in print forever, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
Again, they weren't doing gangbuster, like, even Green Lantern-level sales. I think, looking at the sales information here, I think they ended up, like, you know, like a mid-range book, I'd say.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
As I'm looking here. Yeah, they were, like, selling, like, in between, like, a Flash and Wonder Woman style, you know, in that neck of the woods, so that's not terrible, I guess.
Right.
You know, nothing to sneeze at. They were mostly in the top 50 of the monthly sales on a consistent basis. So that's, again, not terrible.
But you wonder how, like, well they'll sell in trades from here on out, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And that's part of the thing that you actually have to look at, too. So hopefully, you know, they'll do a lot. Because I already saw that they're having the hardcovers. I'm not even sure how they're doing it. If they're doing a couple in each one, like, mm-hmm. Like if it's going to be just, like, because... A Silk Spectre, and then a comedian one, then an Ozymandias. But then you'd probably mix. Trying to think which ones were the 2 4 issue ones. There was the Dr. Manhattan was one, and then there was mm-hmm. another 4 issue one. You'd maybe squeeze the two of them into one and try to stretch your dollar a little bit.
Well, you had the Moloch 2 issue one, and then there was the Dollar Bill 1 issue one,
which was weird. The Dollar Bill one was weird because that was mm-hmm. the one that most. Felt not Watchmen-y to me, if that makes any sense.
Okay.
Because, you know, spoiler alert, Dollar Bill was the guy who got shot, you know, saving the bank. He got shot through the head. His cape got caught in the revolving door. So he's the one narrating the story. And mm-hmm. you're kind of like, okay, this is a dead guy narrating the story. And not that that I've never seen that before in comics, but it was that you're reading a comic where it's supposed to be more real world. The only, like, really wacky thing is Dr. Manhattan. And it's weird to have, like, a ghost narrating a story. I don't know. It just took me out of it.
Huh. Interesting.
So, yeah. But I enjoyed two or three of them, and then the other were middle of the road for me.
So one of the other things that I want to mention is we do try to shy away from the movie stuff, but we are getting, as mentioned, toward the beginning of official summer movie season, just 2 weeks away. Iron Man has already premiered in the UK and pretty much everywhere else but the United States. So there's reviews and even more spoilers all over the place online. The first, I guess, teaser trailer for Thor went up just the other day. The new Thor 2 Electric Boogaloo or whatever the subtitle of it is.
Yeah, I just found out that happened today. I haven't seen it.
Right, and I'm not going to see it. I'm doing my best. I need to stay clean with these movies, you know. But the one thing that did make me excited, we can get into some of the other speculation that's going on with who's going to be in what movies, is I guess during the press junket for Iron Man 3, whoever's in charge of the movie division at Marvel mentioned that Daredevil rights have reverted back to Marvel Studios.
Yeah, because that was that whole thing with, I'm trying to remember what movie they were trying to make, and they were, we'll end up giving up the Daredevil rights. So that'd be kind of cool to see Daredevil show up in maybe a Marvel movie.
Mm-hmm. Say Daredevil shows up in every Marvel movie, the S.H.I.E.L.D. TV show. More Daredevil, the better.
That's right, and I mean, what, he's only had 20-some issues, so to be the freshest character on the big screen is the way you'd have to put it.
Did you see the Patton Oswalt thing from Parks and Recreation where he kind of just went off on the Star Wars and Marvel movie franchises?
Yes, but I didn't see all of it because I was somewhere, killing time, and he was filibustering, right? And he was just doing a 10-minute rant, and I saw about about half of it to three quarters, and I was crying. I thought it was really good. And then what's her face like chiming in every couple of seconds? He's like, oh, like Tony Stark. That's the one character you've mentioned so far that I recognize.
Well, when he got, this is the thing, is the character that he was playing was supposed to be a crazy person, obviously,
mm-hmm.
and you know he was a crazy person. I only bring this up because I've mentioned this a couple times since I watched it, is that he mentions with the Avengers that we have to get your second stringers like Hawkeye and Black Widow out of there and get A-list people like Moon Knight in there.
Right.
Those are the words of a crazy person.
That is the one thing that kind of showed me that he might go Clock Tower someday.
Right.
That character.
Moon Knight A-list character. Oh my goodness.
Like I always said, I don't think Moon Knight wants to be Moon Knight. He wants to be somebody else. That's why he has multiple personality disorder.
Oh boy. It should just...
What?
They should just release it and just call it Bleach Batman.
Oh, Batman with the proportional powers of the moon.
Right.
That's right.
Didn't we have an episode title where he was bit by the moon or some nonsense?
Yeah, that's what I always said, is when anybody says they love Moon Knight, I'm like, I don't understand Moon Knight. Was he bitten by the moon and now has the proportional powers of the moon? I don't get it.
So, you know, we talk about this, and there's a lot more Marvel movies coming out and a lot more comic book properties coming out, and Todd had mentioned before we started recording books like Robert Kirkman's Ant-Man story. Allegedly, that is going to be the Ant-Man, Aaron O'Grady, who's going to be the Ant-Man movie. Terry Moore's Rachel Rising is being optioned for a TV show, so the first issues of those are skyrocketing in price. Speculation of who the villains are going to be in the Guardians of the Galaxy movie and their first appearances are starting to see a little movement there. So, yeah, this is the one thing that I guess I like, but I also hate about these comic book movies, you know? The people trying to make a quick buck off these characters' first appearances, where you should just go to the comic book store and say, hey, I hear there's a Guardians of the Galaxy movie coming out. Do you have a Guardians of the Galaxy comic book? And then they do, and you can buy it, and it's only $4. And, you know, it's going to be enjoyable, and you're not going to just put it on a shelf and hope in 4 years it's worth, like, 10 times what you paid for it.
That's crazy talk. What you have to do is you have to go and find out where their first appearance was, maybe the first appearance of the villain in the movie or anything that's going to be, you know, a TV show, and get those, because they're all going to be like Walking Dead someday. They're all going to be $1,000 for, like, the first issues. And I just look at it and I go crazy, because look at something like Rachel Rising. Now, I forget. I want to say it's like $80 for the first issue. It's ridiculous. The Irredeemable Ant-Man, they're saying, like, you know, now it's Robert Kirkman. It's a good book. But now like I've seen, like, you know, they're getting $10 for each issue online. And I'm like, just because you think it's going to be something with a movie. Now I look at something like Saga, which I love. And to me, that, like, I haven't heard any talk of a movie. I haven't heard any talk of a TV show. It's just a good book with a low print run that people want now. You know, like, I don't hear anybody talking, oh, I want this because I think it'll be a movie someday. It's like, no, you know, people are like, this is really good. And if you want to get the run, you have to pay a lot of money because it had such a small print run. But, and they're smart enough to keep the trades out and everything. And to me, there's good reasons why a book goes up, and there's bad reasons why a book goes up. And it just drives me nuts. And every day I see somebody come in the shop, like, do you, and it's so like see-through when they do it. It's oh, do you have any early Walking Dead? I have a few on the wall over there. Yeah, what are they going for? Like, you got any cheap? Yeah, I have cheap early Walking Dead issues. You, the guy off the street, have come in and are about to beat me at my own game. I had no idea what I was sitting on until you walked through the door. Yes, I'll give you Walking Dead 1 through 10 for half a cover, because I've been sitting on them so long. It just, it does. It's ridiculous what I see.
Yeah, and I was actually going to say, because The Sixth Gun is being made into the, you know, the TV show here as well. They're already casting. It's already getting ready to go to pilot season. And I'm like, well, I haven't heard a ton of talk about that sort of, you know, that one going crazy. And the trades are stuff that are always in print. And yeah, just as I'm tooling around on the eBay, issue one on average about $200, the free comic book day. version of it $90. The issues 2 and 3 are $75 a pop. So that's another one that's quietly shooting up the charts as well. But, you know, again, it's available all the time in trade. It's constantly available. The digital stuff is always available. The first issue's free. And that's the thing is you gotta think that eventually, hoping that digital becomes a bigger force so that stuff like this goes away.
Yeah, but I don't think it will go away because you'll have the comics. The less comics you'll have, the more they'll think they're worth something. So I think maybe you'll have this weird, like, do you know what I'm saying? Like, oh, if there's less of them, then that means it's worth even more, even though, because you can get them digitally. But, you know, the collector is only going to want the hard copy. I don't understand the way the industry is going to go in the next few years, but it's going to be a weird ride.
Yeah, it is going to, and again, the comics are a billion dollar industry, you know, $400-$500 domestically these movies make, and there's, you know, no less than 3 or 4 big budget, you know, movies coming out this summer, you know, whether it be Iron Man, whether it be Wolverine, whether it be Superman. And then I think, you know, if you consider, what else are we talking about? Like that RIPD is a, you know, based on a comic book, unless I'm mistaken.
Mm-hmm. Sin City is going to be not the summer, but this year. Did you say Sin City?
No, I didn't say Sin City, but then there's the 300 book. I think the 300 sequel's coming out as well.
Right. Or prequel. I'm not sure which way that works.
Whatever it is. But there's tons and tons of money to be made with these comic book movies. And, you know, I guess people are making money. You know, and again, I'm kind of being a little hypocritical here because I am selling a bunch of comics online, but they're not mine. They're being got rid of as a friend. It's not like I'm using this to make thousands and thousands of dollars, and neither is he. It's just like, hey, I moved. I'm going all digital. Get rid of these.
But that's a different story. I mean, I've had comics that, you know, you and me, we've been collecting a long time.
Mm-hmm.
You get overrun. It's like, you know, they're falling down around your head. Yeah, but like when you sell stuff, yeah, something might be worth money. Like someday maybe I'll sell my sagas. You know, they're going for a lot of money. But like we're not like, oh, we're buying Saga because we think it's going to go up. We enjoy Saga. And if we sell it to some guy who thinks it's going to go up or somebody else, like, you know, I sell my Thanos issues because, you know, he's in the movie and they think that they're going to put their kids through college on this. This stuff, like, fluctuates, especially when there's so many of these out there, like a Saga or a Walking Dead or smaller print runs. But some of these books that they're speculating on, these older books, there's tons of them out there. But when we sell books, it's like more for room, or other people that I know sell it for room, and it's usually never the great stuff. I mean, like, I'm looking at, like, if I sold a lot of my comics, I'd be like, who wants, you know, Checkmate from the 80s? I know there's a lot of clamor for that, you know, and here's my complete run of Sliders, the comic from the TV show, not White Castle, but the TV show. And I know that a lot of people want those, you know. It's not for the same reasons when you sell stuff. But
I agree.
And I'm sorry, my heart's going a little fast. I got worked up.
Well, we'll get off this. You know, you had mentioned it before, and I just want to mention that, of course, this weekend as well. The reason that there's not a ton of news is because C2E2 in Chicago is happening this week, and this is another one of those shows that, one, I would love to get to, and, you know, this is like a New York for me, or was it Charlotte, the one that we've talked about before?
Yep, Charlotte's awesome.
Right, so that's one I'd love to get to as well. And there's tons and tons of people at this one, tons and tons of announcements being made. And I know Balthazar and Frank are going to have the first two issues of Aw Yeah Comics. And, you know, from being at the Reading Con a couple weeks ago, some maybe other announcements coming up.
Don't get them in trouble.
My detective work might have figured out what they might have been talking about, but we'll see if I'm right.
Oh, you'll have, I don't wanna... you'll have to tell me about that when this is over.
Well, I know I told you the speculation, but you don't remember.
Oh, that's right, because I usually don't pay attention to you.
Right. About a...
Don't worry about it.
Okay. I won't get too much into it.
Okay. I don't want to ruin... I don't want to have their houses taken away.
No. Goodness, no. So... that's really all there is in news. I do want to mention, of course, the digital freebies that are available. There's a sale going on Nick Spencer's Morning Glories from Image. I think the fourth trade just came out this past week, if I'm not mistaken, or it comes out this week. They have everything up to that trade available in single issues at 99 cents a pop. And the first issue is free, as I think pretty much every single Image number one is available on Comixology for free. New Avengers number one, the beginning of Bendis' run on the Avengers franchise that he was on for quite some time. Avengers The Initiative, which was where a lot of the characters that ended up being Avengers Academy and now in Young Avengers made their first appearances. Iron Age Alpha number one, which, to be honest with you, I'm not really 100% sure what it is. I just know it has Iron Man in it. Those are Marvel's digital freebies this week. And we had mentioned last week that Monkey Brain Comics' digital book, Bandette, was nominated for a bunch of things in the Eisners, including Best Digital Book. And issue one of Bandette is available for free on Comixology until July. So it's just there sitting, waiting for the taking. It's been promotionally given away with Comixology before, and now it is going to be available for the next 3 months, just sitting there waiting, and I'll continue to push that book because it's a lot of fun.
Yep. Free is good. Free is good.
Free is good. So let's get into the stuff that we read from last week, if we shall.
Yes.
Where would you like to begin?
Would you like to start with Iron Man?
Yes. Let's talk about Iron Man, just because that's the one that I have the link up in front of me. Kieran Gillen, Greg Land on art. This is the conclusion to the Godkiller storyline, I guess, where Tony is on trial on this distant planet for killing the Phoenix during the Avengers vs. X-Men thing. And, yeah, so, I'm getting this book. I enjoy it. But, man, do I still have problems with the art.
Okay, that's funny, because I know we've talked about this. I like the art, so... But like, we've been that...
Greg Land draws really cool armor, mm-hmm. and he draws a really cool Death's Head. But I don't know about the rest.
Okay.
It's very questionable to me.
Okay, would it make you stop reading the book?
No.
Okay.
No. I think after the next issue, after issue 9, he's off the book. There's another artist coming in to do like 3 or 4 issues.
Yeah, there's like a Tony origin story or something coming up with a different artist. So you won't have to put up with him for very much longer. Maybe he'll be back. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I know sometimes they do that to give the artist a little free time. But I really love this issue. I love like Tony in the arena fighting Death's Head, and you know how it's not going well, and he's trying to use like the rules say you can't be this, you know, you can't be enhanced, and it's really cool with like the way Death's Head, you know, rebuts that, and then as you're going on, like I did not see something coming with a certain character, you know, maybe. You know, using Tony a little bit.
Right.
And I thought that was really awesome. And then the like everything that happens at the end, and you know, like the whole analogy with the slug on a person, how like God help it if you know the person sees the slug. And I just like the characters that they brought in that just wreak havoc at the end, that they're kind of cool. I don't know much about them, but I've listened to Dave talk about them a lot, and you know where they've shown up, but they're always trouble whenever they're around. And I want to see where all of this goes. This was really fun.
Weren't they most as recently in Fantastic Four?
Yes, but they were the from another dimension. Like, remember, like, how they had all the Reeds, the alternate Earths?
Yes.
So they were them from whatever universe that they were from. I'm trying to remember the last time that we saw them. I know they show up and there was one of their heads was in the Guardians of the Galaxy, I think, that they had that their base in it.
Right.
If I'm right. But there was some other stuff. But I just like it. I want to see where things run from here on out. I really enjoy it. How about you?
I enjoy it as well. As I mentioned before, I really like the way that Greg Land draws the armor. The new look of the armor, which matches what Tony's wearing in Guardians of the Galaxy, is really awesome as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a really good book. Iron Man is a sleeper hit. I guess, if you will, it's an under-the-radar sort of book. It should be a bigger book because Iron Man is such a big franchise.
Yeah.
But for them, and I don't know, I feel that it maybe gets a little bit of a short shrift with all the X-Men, Avengers sort of stuff.
I agree. And also, I think one of the things that hurts it is it's a once a month book, you know, the way comics used to be, but not now. So like you'll have your like this and Thor, you know, they come out once a month, and then your Avengers and your X-Men's, we've talked about it before, they're, you know, weekly almost at times. So I think because this was another book like with Thor, I'm like, is Iron Man late? Because it feels like it's been forever. You know, I feel like I've read three issues of all new X-Men since I've read Iron Man, whatever, since Iron Man 7. And it's like, yo, yeah, it has been a month. And I have read three all new X-Men. So, but that's, I think that might hurt it a little bit. It gets lost in the shuffle.
I think so. It definitely needs something. And maybe this next storyline will be the thing that gives it a little bit, because it's getting ads and everything, so hopefully more people check it out.
Yep. Baby Iron Man, and a baby Stark in a big Iron Man helmet. Who wouldn't buy that?
It's definitely an interesting image.
Mm-hmm.
So the next book I'd like to talk about would be Superior Spider-Man number 8.
Okay.
Are you still with Superior Spider-Man these days?
Yes, I'm reading Superior Spider-Man here and there.
Here and there.
Here
did
and
you
there.
Was this one of the there issues?
Yeah, it was here. Somebody's lending them to me. So,
okay.
Yeah, I'm reading them.
So essentially, this issue and the previous issue was all in regards to Cardiac trying to get... you know, he's got an underground place where he's helping all of the people, specifically a lot of people that were hurt by the last time Doc Ock went crazy. One of the things that he has is something he doesn't know how to work, which is one of Doc Ock's old pieces of equipment. So, of course, Doc Ock wants it back. And this is also him dealing with the Avengers, because the Avengers think something is up with Spider-Man. There is something up with Spider-Man. And I liked the little reveal of what they were actually looking for.
That made me laugh out loud.
Yes.
I thought that was funny. That just brings like a full circle of things, you know?
Mm-hmm. The scene that he had with Black Widow was really good as well.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a part that threw me when he spoke to her in Russian. Like, he just simply said thank you to her in Russian.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is going to play into something. Because, you know, Natasha is a super spy, and she's good at figuring stuff out, and I'm sure if that's not a tell that there's something still going on with Spider-Man, I don't know what will.
And that moment, I didn't even think about that.
Mm-hmm.
That's really cool, because that moment is tossed off as a joke because of what Peter inside of, you know, his brain is trying to do.
Right.
And she says she just throw it's like she says something that's just ludicrous after that. So that's one of those things that to me, now that you're saying that completely took me off the scent, which is, mm-hmm. you know, good writing. So I could see that happening.
Right. And to me, it stuck out only because I'm like, huh, that's interesting that it was worded, you know, that happened with these two characters. And then she brings up their past relationship during the Ends of the Earth sort of thing. And, I think that is going to play more into this whole storyline than we think right now.
So she was in the whole... Was she fighting Doc Ock? Because I wasn't reading in Ends of the Earth.
Yes, it was her. You know, there was a whole thing at the end where the Avengers are trying to take Spidey down, and then it ends up being Black Widow and Silver Sable who, you know, score the final blow, and Silver Sable dies.
Ah, okay.
In the battle. Yes.
Did at any point Doc Ock speak Russian to her during that?
I don't remember. I can definitely go back and check.
That's just one of those things that popped in my mind. That's why I'm kind of asking you mm-hmm. if you remembered. Because, like, you know, it would be interesting if you saw Spider-Man there and, like, so they were talking Spanish and he has no clue. And it's one of those things that she's like, ah, interesting, you know?
Right.
I don't know.
So the... So Spidey ends up getting, Spidey, Doc Ock, you know, the equipment that he's looking for, the reason he's looking for it, and what ends up happening at the end. And if you're a good little boy or girl reading your comic books and you haven't been reading the advanced solicitations, this probably was a big, you know, this was probably a big surprise to you, but I think if you were reading the solicitations, they might have tipped their hand a little bit on this one.
I would I'll have to take your word for it because I haven't seen the solicitations.
Right.
So I'm a good little boy.
See, I am too, but I can definitely see based on what happens at the end of this issue.
Mm-hmm.
I'm excited to see it. This has been a great book. I've loved this since Dan Slott took over the book permanently as the only writer twice a month, essentially. And now with the Superior stuff, I can't say that I'll be sad to see it go because I don't think it's going anywhere.
Mm-hmm. And I like the whole stuffed animal thing. I thought that was really awesome. That was one of my favorite little bits in this book. That's the one thing, like I said, I'll have trouble with Stegman's art or Ramos's art, but I have to give Dan Slott total credit on everything that he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
So
very good. Very good book.
Yes.
So I'm going to leave the next one up to you. We got two left.
You know what? Let's go with Doctor Who.
All right.
Prisoners of Time for Leonard's favorite 12-issue series right now.
I just like giving you a hard time about it. This is one of those issues that made me wonder if any of these characters that they came across, especially, and again, you're going to kill me because I don't remember the names of any of these people. The rhino-looking people?
The Jadoon.
The Jadoon, yes. I did have copious notes on this issue, but I think I threw them away in disgust. Were they ever on the show?
Yes, but they were only the new Doctor Who show. So this is the first time we're seeing a classic Doctor, seeing a current, like a newer villain, even though they're not so much a villain as they are a police force that you can hire, but they're like, they can be a brutal police force. Like, they take the letter to the law to like they mean it. Like, if you cross the road, you know, and it's illegal on that planet, then you got problems with these guys. And they speak in rhymes, and it's all like any word that rhymes with Joe. So it'll be, and this is my Jadoon impression. People who watch Doctor Who will know, it'll be like, Joe go ro do no fo. That's what they say all the time. That's the only thing that they'll say. And occasionally one will speak the language that you do. You're in awe, I can tell.
Well, again, I thought this was probably the strongest of the issues that I've read so far.
Wow, really?
Yes. I enjoyed it a lot. It was a very simple, straightforward story. You know, we're getting you to point A to point B. It's like, here's what it is. There's a twist. The Doctor sees there might be more to this than meets the eye. And, yeah, I enjoyed this issue. Like I said, it was definitely fun.
Me too. I like, you know, it hit all the things like you maybe wouldn't know, like the Fourth Doctor offering somebody jelly babies. That was like one of his things. Like the Fourth Doctor carried around a bag of, like, you know, candy. They call them jelly babies over there. And in one episode, because his reputation had preceded him, and the Doctor translated into he who will eat your children, because jelly babies. He was offering them jelly babies to eat, and they thought that he was coming to eat their babies.
Oh, boy.
See, so this is the little knowledge things that I can throw out. And his companion, Leela and K-9, the robot dog, is famous.
Yes.
You know, I don't know if you've ever seen him before. He even actually had his own spin-off series, because the guy who did the voice actually owns the rights to him, and he'll lend them back to the Doctor Who to use occasionally. And then there's Leela, the leather-clad girl who, let's see, when was this? This was around 78 for me. So I was like, like 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 watching Leela.
Right.
And Leela made me more interested in the show. It made me the first female actress that I completely like started to look at her attributes as an actress. And maybe kind of like lean me towards British actresses, somebody with a British accent. I seem to like their craft more.
I will say this, the way that they characterized her and drew her in the issue, having not seen any of this character ever, you know, on a TV show, I could tell that she was probably a foxy dame, as it were.
Mm-hmm. She was what they, because you know that the show is a children's show over there.
Yes.
She was like the first companion for the fathers. to watch Doctor Who with their children. They actually said that. But she was, I'm trying to remember, do you know the book and then the movie where a professor takes like a woman from like, you know, the rough side of England. He tries to make her proper. Was that Doctor Doolittle? Do you know the story I'm talking about, though?
Yeah.
Well, that's what she's supposed to be, because she's like a barbarian from another planet.
Oh,
and she decides to, like, from the future or the past, I'm not sure what timeline, but she's definitely a humanoid from another planet. And the doctor takes her in, and the whole idea of having Leela was that he was trying to make her more sophisticated. That's why, like, the whole time he's like, don't kill anybody. You know what I mean? Like, and that was her thing. She'd be like, oh, can I use, like, she had poison darts and stuff, and he's like, no poison darts. No, like this. And then he'd try to, like, take her to England during Victorian times and teach her, like, play, like, about theater and stuff like that. But she was always, like, she wanted to go hunting in the moors or something like that. So, just an interesting character.
Right, and I'll say this. This, you know, as I mentioned, this is the more popular, this is the Doctor Who that most non-Whoers think of. Is that what they're, whatever they're called, Whovians?
Whovians.
Right. And, I think that's probably why, because that sounds like a very, you know, interesting and not, what's the words I'm looking for?
I don't know.
Not very overwhelming of a story.
Right.
Like, sure, there's a lot of the space stuff and the time travel stuff, and he's an alien and the different doctors and everything else like that, but just what you pitched there of, like, his interaction with the companion, I think that in and of itself is a compelling storyline that probably is why that's, like, the most popular iteration of the Doctor.
Right, and then he had other companions, and over the years, he just brought such fun to the character. I really do think there was a lot of other ones, and I joked, you know, the last one was the adventure doctor, try to be more like James Bond. But this one, like, when he would just, and I know this sounds weird, he'd just come on the screen, and he'd smile, and the way he would act, and he'd just be just fun, and like, it stands up today, and to me, it makes the episodes easier to watch, because even though he had nothing to work with, he sold it. You know what I mean? He was like, you know, I'm doing this. And if he had facts and everything, I do think, you know, he is the best known doctor, but now with the new ones and getting so many ratings and all over the world, we'll see. But to me, you know, I said it last week and I think we even named it, he is my first doctor, and you never forget your first doctor. I just I was happy with this story. I want a page, actually. I got to find out if somebody has pages of this for sale.
Get cracking on that, I guess.
Yeah, because, you know, people are going to buy these up like hotcakes. I know you have your eye on a few.
I'll tell you, the covers are nice. I like the covers a lot.
I would like to get all the covers, but I don't think that's going to happen.
No.
So
the last book that we have to talk about from last week would be Daredevil number 25. And I know that you said he only has 20 issues, but you forget all your point ones and your double shippings and crossovers with things. So it's nearing 30 almost.
Okay. I'm just going by the number on the cover because I get confused easy.
Written by Mark Waid with art by Chris Somney, who, you know, has been really, really great as the regular artist on this book. As mentioned, the Doctor Who book was the book that Todd was most looking forward to from this past week. This was the book I was most looking forward to this week, and it did not disappoint. Even though someone tipped off the little bit of a spoiler thing, the reveal at the end of the book.
Which, by the way, made my jaw drop as I was reading it, because I didn't see it. Like, I didn't have it spoiled for me. Never before has the words "try the red one" I'm getting goosebumps right now.
Because, again, out of context, when you get that as a text and you haven't read this issue, you're just like, oh, well, I'm friends with crazy people who just, you know, text me random things.
Mm-hmm.
And then after I read this issue, I'm like, aha! And yes, that was such a great moment, even though it was kind of like foreshadowed a little bit to me in my text.
Mm-hmm.
It was such a great moment out of nowhere. I think there's red herrings in this issue of who the mastermind behind all this is.
Okay.
But I think that they're just that. I think they're leading you to believe that the person behind this all is Stick, or someone who was a disciple of Stick, stick the person, as you saw in some of the flashback sequences, who trained Matt Murdock to become Daredevil.
Who was a bit of a jerk.
Right.
But anyway.
And because he was such a jerk, and because he is portrayed as such a jerk, that's why I don't think it's going to be him.
Okay.
Because he is dead and has been long dead.
Really? This is the first I've ever seen him.
Right. But in the world of comic books, nobody is dead forever. No one ever stays dead. These days, it used to be Bucky and Uncle Ben, and now it's just Uncle Ben with a asterisk next to him. Because, you know, he could come back any day now.
I think that's the end of Age of Ultron, to tell you the truth.
not Angela, not Miracle Man, it's Uncle Ben?
Yep.
That would be a nice kick in the pants, I'll tell you that much.
Mm-hmm. But
so this book is awesome. I love Daredevil. I can't stress to you enough. I know we're going to get into another book that we're pushing this year, but do not let you gentle reader think that we are not pushing this book. This book is awesome. All the time, whenever Marvel does their sales, I wait for them to put these issues on sale again so I can pick them up digitally. This is one of the few books that these days that I'm double dipping on.
I was doing a nice round table at the shop the other day, explaining this book to a couple of friends of ours who don't get it. And I'm like, I just gave them the synopsis. And when we got to the end and stuff that was going on, they were like, I might have to read this book. I'm like, yes. What have I been saying for almost 30 issues? I'll go with your timeline now. Almost 30 issues. That you've got to read this. So I think we might have picked up a few more at the shop.
Yeah, I like how you're the advocate out there in the world for Daredevil. I need to be the advocate out there for Doctor Who.
Oh, my goodness.
I need to be the one bringing people into the Whoverse.
The Whoverse?
Yes.
Is that a vacuum cleaner?
I don't know. It is now.
Okay.
So, yeah, Daredevil's awesome. One last thing I wanted to ask you about, Todd, as you had mentioned before we started recording, Age of Ultron number 6.
Yes. This is one of those books that, like, you know, it was funny when I was talking with you and DJ that, like, you guys weren't big on it and everything, that you said there wasn't a lot going on. And I found it funny because, like, it's one of those things with Brian Michael Bendis that I think he can't win on this book. If he had done all the stuff that he normally does, people would be like, oh, it's too wordy. Then he doesn't do that, and they're like, oh, there's not enough going on. But I've been thoroughly enjoying this book. I liked Hitch's art on the first couple. Now Pacheco is doing it, and I think he has lost a step. But the story basically so far is Ultron is, as of, not this issue, so I won't spoil issue 6, but he's, you know, taking over the world, and he's hunting down heroes and stuff like that. And we find out that he's not even around. He just has his mindless robots that work from around, and he's in the future. So basically a bunch of characters get together. They somehow steal, Nick Fury had stolen Doom's time platform, and they're going into the future to find wherever Ultron is doing this. And basically Wolverine says, no, you're doing this the wrong way. We should go back into the past and kill Pym before he builds Ultron. And they're like, no, you stay here and guard the machine, and if it doesn't work, you know, another wave or whatever. When he goes, Wolverine's like, who knows how to run this machine? Like, you know, in issue 5, we're going to the back of the past. And basically that's this. It's him and Invisible Woman tags along, and he doesn't know it until he can smell her. And he's like, they're going. And the two of them are, Wolverine's for it, and she's against it. And it's them debating on the way to see Pym. And I think it's really, really good. I just really enjoy this.
Well, again, I feel bad because I did fall off of it. The first issue, and I know that you're saying that Bendis is getting kind of a bad rap with it, and, you know, if he did what he normally does, people would criticize it, and he was kind of damned if he did or damned if he didn't. It just felt like, to me...
Was it padded out for you? Is that what it
felt
like?
Yeah, it was definitely padded out, especially like a $4 book, and the first month it shipped like 3 times. And it's a book that they sat on for almost 2 years, and now it's like, rush, 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 we have to get it out.
See, I think it was always going to be a weekly book, though. Now, granted, maybe not back then when they were discussing it, but when you say, like, you know, rush, 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 I understand what you're saying, that they're, you know, whatever, they want to get it all out now. But at no point wasn't it supposed to be a weekly book, though. I mean, it's actually was late, I think, when that fourth issue didn't come out on time.
Hmm.
So to me, like, I knew going into it, it was almost weekly. I thought maybe there would be a little gap, but I like that. I don't think maybe a little padded out, but I don't even think that. I just think this is a nice pace for it, and I've enjoyed it, and I like the fact that all the AU books, like, I got, the only one I got so far was the Fantastic Four one. And like, right, I said, to me, it was a throwaway story because literally before Fantastic Four, I think it was issue 5 was like, you know, hey, we're off in time and space. Issue 5 AU, oh, Reed gets killed, Ben gets killed, Human Torch get killed because they go back to Earth and it's the Age of Ultron Earth. Then we get issue 6 and they're back. I think that's a little, like, you know, weird, but in the end, I like it even better because I don't have to read, I don't have to read any of the other ones if I don't want to, and I could just read Age of Ultron.
There you go.
So, don't feel I need to read those other, but there was one small interesting thing in the Fantastic Four that I think I said before that I'm like, oh, I want to see that in the book. So I'm hoping, you know, maybe they'll expand on it, but I could see them doing that in the AU book. So they're not completely throwaway books.
Well, and that's what will be the true test of things, because it's supposed to be this big game-changing event and so forth, and we'll see come the event being over and, you know, what shakes out of it and how earth-shaking this event will actually be.
Right. I'll let you know everything that I thought of it when we get to 10, but as of 6, I'm really enjoying this, and the ending of this book is really cool. I like what they did, so I don't want to say anything until, like, a few issues in. I'll let you know.
All right. Well, you know, and I was going to make a joke that I can read the issue, or I can just wait 3 weeks from now where they press release it 2 months before the issue comes out. Not unlike the book that we're most looking forward to this week, I'm sure.
Don't you put words in my mouth.
Well, Todd, I was going to throw you a curveball in regards to this, because I do have an also-ran that I do want to mention here, of course. But I will ask you, what is the book that you're most looking forward to coming out this week?
Let me look over my list. I'm bringing it up on my phone now. I'm going to go with All-Star Western 19.
Yes, All-Star Western 19. This is a book that the speculation has been out for many, many months on it. And then just this past Monday, it was in USA Today and all the big news outlets. Jimmy Pamiotti was tweeting that he hopes retailers have ordered enough because there's going to be tons and tons of buzz. This is not the podcast to spoil that for you. We have been telling you for at the very least the last 19 months, definitely for the last 4 or 5 months, to get on board with All-Star Western. Hopefully your store has some in stock. This would be a great point to jump on to All-Star Western with issue number 19.
Hey, and I'm going to be like you were with Daredevil. It's, yes, 20 issues, mister, with the zero issue. Don't you shortchange All-Star Western.
Oh, goodness. So, the other book that I also wanted to give an honorable mention to coming out this week is the last issue of Superman Family Adventures, the Baltazar and Franco book, the end of everything that they're doing with that universe of the Superman and DC characters. I think they affectionately refer to it as Earth 53.
See, I get that because it's 52 Earths, so it's like an extra one. Gotcha.
So, we'll, you know, they do have the movement coming out in the next couple of weeks, and I wouldn't be surprised to see some sort of other Superman or maybe even another big-name character-related announcement coming, maybe this weekend at C2E2, maybe in Free Comic Book Day as well.
Wow. You've been pounding the pavement, haven't you?
Yeah, maybe. We'll see.
You're good.
So... before we wrap things up and get into our interactive portion of the show with the sketch party and the Twitter stuff, of course, I would be remiss not to mention our great sponsor, Bake Me a Wish at bakemeawish.com. Tons and tons of gourmet cakes delivered to you anywhere in the United States, even overnight, no matter where you are. You know, I think they even ship overseas to folks in the military to APO, FPO addresses. And I know from my own personal dealings, very few people ship to those these days.
Really?
Yes. It's a postal thing, especially if you're out of the United States and you're looking to send something using the non-United States postal service to ship to an APO, FPO address. But these good folks at Bake Me a Wish will send there. And they're also heavily involved with the Operation Birthday Cake program with our military. Tons and tons of great cakes. And as I was doing some cleaning up, I came across the box from our delicious cake that we had gotten. And it just brought back so many memories.
It did, too. I had to get rid of mine because it made me hungry every time I looked at it. And, you know, and like I said, my motto, less work, more cake. That's yeah, I think you know, they should use that.
You know, and Mother's Day is coming up here soon. I think I'm going to wait to see what the May cake of the month is. And I think I might have that sent to my mom's house. Ah. Or at the very least, send it here for my wife. Since she is a mother, officially.
You could send it for the man. Or there has the man learned how to use the computer yet? He might send it on his own. You never know.
It's a dead... Once he gets his numbers figured out, there's going to be no limit. He'll be reading off our credit card numbers and ordering just Batmans and Iron Mans to show up at the house to hang out.
Ah, run, jump, climb.
Well, pew, pew, pew now for Iron Man.
Oh, that's right. And you said he knows Doom, so...
Yes.
So I'm going to have to bring over... Do you mind if I give him an early birthday present of a TARDIS?
Oh, goodness. If only there was a Doctor Who cartoon...
Oh, you know what? I do have one.
Oh, no.
On DVD. I'm bringing it over.
Oh, it's my own fault for saying something.
What are you doing later today?
Getting my comic books and then running home.
Okay.
Oh, goodness. So, definitely check out Bake Me a Wish. Like I said, Mother's Day is coming up. You know, your mom probably deserves a lot, and this is a lot. The cakes are delicious, and she'll think you did something really good. So definitely check them out. Let's get into Sketch Party. Tons and tons of great sketches. Some new people contributing stuff. Rick Williams, a longtime follower on Twitter with the Twitter handle Free Karate Chops, sent one that he got from the makeshift Boston Comic Con this past weekend. A really nice Batman from Cesar Feliciano. Now, Andrew from 215 Inc., he sent one, but because he didn't use the regular Twitter pic, he used YFrog, I couldn't get the picture to frame correctly.
Okay.
Who was that dark side by? Should I know who that was by?
I had trouble, too, with it. I don't know exactly who it was by.
Okay, because it was really cool looking.
Well, you go through. I'm going to go through my Twitter feed.
Okay, Kurt Cooney, our listener who is very avidly against Twitter, sent us a really awesome cap that he had sent. Now, unfortunately, he didn't say who it was drawn by, but I will, of course, include it in the link so you could check that out. And I think this links up to his direct website if you play around with the URL, and you, our listeners, can harass him. And actually, as I pull it up here, it says, by Scott Rory. He got it at Dragon Con last year, and it's more of the Ultimates movie cap. It's a really nice shaded sketch of Captain America. And again, always we do thank all of our listeners for contributing to Sketch Party on the weekends. And Todd, your sketch, I know you're off searching some stuff up, is Booster Gold by Kevin Maguire. And you'd posted interesting information about this sketch, but also... you know, there's always a great story behind your sketches.
Yes, basically this sketch was when one of the few times that I went up to him and I had a big list of characters I needed to get. You know, and I only got so much cabbage in my pocket, so I have to decide on which one I'm going to get. And I looked down on the table and there was a booster pre-done. And I don't know if you know that. That's a good thing with Kevin Maguire and sketches. So I just reached down and picked that bad boy up and said, I'll take this, Mr. Maguire. And he's like, yes, you will, Todd. Like, because I think he knows me by my first name now. I don't get sir yet, but I do get Todd. So, yeah, it was just one of those that he pre-made for the show, you know, to have a couple out there. And I was like, I'll more than quickly take that. And then I put the money. He took the money out of my sweaty fist and he was good to go.
Now, you had mentioned with this that he never drew Skeets. Did you get into that with him, why he never drew Skeets? Was it just never drawn into the story, or...?
It was one of those, I'm not really sure why, I've never asked him that. I just know because it came about I didn't think about it. Like, yeah, he was never in there the whole time that I read the book. But I remember from when they did 52 and they killed, spoiler alert, killed Ted Kord, that Max had stolen some stuff from Skeets, and that's why we never saw him during the whole Justice League International run. But mm-hmm. they just never had him in the book as far as I know. But so, yeah.
Interesting.
And even other issues without, because Kevin only did up to issue 24, I think, like the Adam Hughes and other guys, that he just never appeared in Justice League International.
Right.
So I hope that was interesting enough.
It was. So our Twitter question from last week was, who is your favorite supporting character? Not sidekick, not, Speedy to the Green Arrow, but, you know, a supporting character, maybe not a super-powered person. Again, we did get lots and lots of suggestions. Noel Margate, a longtime listener, Vegas Margate on Twitter, mentioned Linda Park. Michael Hanskar mentioned Mary Jane. Jeanette Frost, hamster gal on Twitter, mentioned Isabel from Saga, and Lion Cat also got some love from Saga. Mm-hmm. It was good to see some of those, like I said, newer characters get mentioned. Mike Potts on Twitter mentioned John Colby from Chew, and Chew is such a great, fun book. Who else got mentioned? Foggy got a lot of love. I was very surprised to see Foggy in there. And I know you, looking at Foggy Nelson from Daredevil, is almost a brand new character to see that many people say him as their choice.
Shocked me.
Mm-hmm. Oh, Robert Newsom of the Atomic Elbow fanzine, a wrestling fanzine, mentioned Willie Lumpkin. He actually mentioned like 16 people. But I think Robert's got a lot going on in his head. He's got some crazy theories about what's going on in the world of Chikara.
Yeah.
And every time I like mentioning it on podcasts, so it just feeds into his conspiracy theory.
You're so crazy.
Yes, but the far and away winner by our listeners was my choice as well, and that is Alfred. Alfred is like the perennial supporting character. You know, he's a butler, first of all, come on. And he's just so awesome. You know, he's always there kind of to be the foil for everything that's going on in Bruce's life, and he's very helpful, and he's very underrated, and there's always, every now and then you get, like, a really cool Alfred solo story, or, like, a little bit of backstory, stuff that you never saw of him. Alfred was, like, my initial thought for this, and I'm glad to see I was not alone. Our listeners shared the same sentiment as well.
It's interesting, and no one picked mine, and I don't see him as a sidekick when I tell you the name, is Rick Jones.
Oh, okay.
Rick Jones is one of those guys who's been around in a lot of books. First of all, it was his fault, and he has to carry the guilt that he created the Hulk, even though we don't really acknowledge it anymore because the movies, you know, don't have Rick Jones in them. Then he went on and, you know, he tried to be Bucky for a little bit, and he's like, this failed miserably. You know what I mean? And then he was, joined to the two Captain Marvels. The Silver Age or the Bronze Age, and then the new Peter David one, where he, you know, whenever they clang the bands together, he'd go into the other universe and Captain Marvel would come out and they could communicate. And I just always thought that he was, you know, so diverse and had some of my favorite stories of all time over the years over different characters that makes him a good supporting character, unless you see him more as a sidekick.
Well, again, I think he is a good supporting character, but has he been around even, or is he like the Abomination these days?
The last that I saw, now granted, you know, we don't read everything, so I haven't seen everything. He was A-Bomb, an Abomination for a little bit, which is one of the things that I dislike. I dislike not just that, but a lot of characters taking a lot of, in different books, taking side characters and powering them up and making them superheroes. Like Pepper Potts was Rescue for a while. And, you know, like now Banner's girlfriend, what's her name? Betty is a Hulk and he's an A-bomb. And I don't know. I think sometimes it just lessens some of the characters to give them all powers and stuff.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that sentiment. That's Blue Hulk, by the way.
Blue Hulk? Is that who Rick is?
Well, he is A-Bomb, but when he shows up in, like, the mini Marvel stuff, when they have the Hulks doing stuff, there's, you know, Green Hulk, Red Hulk, and then he's in there as Blue Hulk.
Oh, I thought maybe that was something your kid just called him.
Well, no, that is what, you know, that's what he is. He's the Blue Hulk in there, because they don't draw him, like, all scaly and crazy like the Abomination is. They just draw him the same way as the Hulk, but just blue.
Okay, I was not aware of this.
Yes.
But Rick Jones is my answer.
So, I do thank everyone for contributing to the question from this past week, and for this upcoming week. The question I have for everyone is regarding the Avengers. Not so much the Avengers movie, per se, but kind of leading into a little bit of that Patton Oswalt Parks and Recreation video that we had mentioned before. Maybe you saw it, maybe you didn't, but I think everyone has an opinion on it. And there's been so many people that have been in the Avengers. Who do you think should never have been an Avenger?
Ooh. That's interesting.
Yes.
I'd have to actually look over like a site that has the roster, because I have a few ideas in my head, but you're like, and then you'll hear, oh, this guy was an Avenger, or this person was an Avenger. I'd be like, oh, that's the one.
Right. It covers a lot of ground, because I think a shorter list would be people who have never been an Avenger, but there's been a couple times where you'll see it's like, oh, brand new roster, like a lot of those, like the mid to late 100s and early 200s.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, the captain is leading a new team of Avengers, and it's like, I don't know a single one of these people.
yeah, I know what you mean, yeah.
So I guess the question is who should have never been an Avenger, who brought shame to the Avengers name by being on the team, and who would you like to have from the record book stricken that they were never an Avenger?
Interesting question.
Yes. So, I guess, was there anything else you wanted to wrap things up with here, Todd, before we closed out episode 75 of the Weekly Long Box?
Nope, I'm just going to be going into hibernation because the NFL draft is this week, and you won't see me until probably the podcast.
Oh, next boy. Week. I hear the NFL draft is a thing.
It is a thing. And your wrestlers show up and say what to everything the commissioner says, so I like
that. Oh, they do?
Yeah, they do. They'll be like, with the 7th pick in the draft, the Chargers take, and when he pauses, they'll go, what? And I'm like, oh.
Well, hopefully this year, the new fad is doing the Fandango dance.
Oh, I thought maybe it would be the Daniel Bryan, no.
That was last year.
Oh, I'm so far behind on these fads. By the way, I'm out of wrestling.
You miss an episode of Raw, and this is what happens.
Oh, by the way, I'm out of wrestling again. I did the WrestleMania. I did the Raw afterwards. I tried watching the next week. Boom, done.
Yeah, last week was a little rough. This week was pretty cool. Undertaker wrestled on Raw, which was really cool.
I thought you said he didn't do that anymore.
No, it was the first time that he wrestled on Raw in 3 years.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, so the Fandango dance with the doing the song, which sounds eerily similar, but just different enough to the My Dream of Jeannie song that you can't get sued over it.
That's what I thought. I was walking around going do, and I was like, "That's the I Dream of Jeannie." If
right,
Larry still, Hagman it, was alive, there would be a lawsuit.
Right. If it was just a little slower of a tempo, I think they might have a lawsuit on their hands.
Okay. Glad you pointed that out for me.
Yes, so good luck to everyone in their football drafts, who's going to things, and I'll be very excited for the exact moment when the Raiders are statistically eliminated from contention. It'll probably be sometime this Thursday afternoon.
Yes, yes, or it'll be after they win the Super Bowl and there's no more games to play.
All right. Well, we've gone on long enough. We're deep into wrestling and football talk. So for Todd, this is Leonard. I do thank everyone. This was episode 75 of the Weekly Long Box. We will catch you all here next week.